he muttered. "I'm so sorry I couldn't protect you, Los X."
Valera was flying with Abex and Zavex on her flanks. She rolled hard right, a globe brushing her drake's belly, leaving a dark smear and causing it to jerk sharply. Abex climbed steeply away, a trio of ECMs scorching a path below him, but he fell behind as a result. The Math Drake dived and released more globes ahead of Valera and Xavier. The pair followed their target, swooping through the cloud of reptilian bodies, great wings, flame and smoke. Beyond the center of the combat, Max caught sight of a pair of Math Drakes searching for their next target. No, they weren't searching. They were waiting.
"Val-X! Hal-X! Break right! Break right!"
"Negative, Hal-X, we're closing. He's tiring."
The enemy Drake threaded through another skirmish. Calder and Redfern had flanked an enemy and were spearing flame into its neck, driving it away from its support, weaving around it in a tunnel of Drake flesh. It was awesome flying, and Schmidt was trailing them, ready to pounce.
"Negative, Skipper! He's leading you onto another two! Check your nine! Break right! Break right!"
The Math Drake drove into a climb, allowing Abraham to close the gap. He was greedy. He wanted all three of them.
"I don't see them, Hal-X, and we have him."
"Pull out!" yelled Max. "It's a trap! Trust the squad!"
A moment's silence.
"Copy that, Hal-X. Abex, Zavex, hard right on my mark."
Max watched them close on the waiting enemies who were flying in at frightening speed.
"Now, Skipper," he whispered. "Come on."
"Mark! Break right! Break right!"
Valera and Zavex dipped their right wings and sheered away, turning slow rolls, losing height fast and taking themselves from the jaws of the trap.
"Abex, break right! That's an order!"
Max watched Abraham's Drake. He was right on top of his quarry, on the tip of his tail. The Inferno Drake's mouth opened to breathe, but the Math Drake dropped away in a stunning dive turn, ducking away from the oncoming pair who were poised, flaring their wings back, claws outstretched. Max winced at the violence of the impact. Abraham was driven backwards, his Drake venting flame into clear sky, mouth open to roar her frustration. The forces in the pouch must have been horrendous, too much for the muscle and lubricant to absorb. The enemy Drakes poured fire over Abraham, and one of them bled electricity into its body until the Drake jerked spasmodically and fell limp, dead before it began to fall.
"Bastards! Abex is down!"
shouted Max.
"Cole X with me! Let's have one of those fuckers!"
Max angled Martha into intercept.
"Negative, Hal-X. Break off. Head home."
"Skipper, it's..."
"Break off, Hal-X,"
said Valera. And then, much more quietly,
"We're running."
"Copy, Val-X," said Max.
"Inferno-X, Val-X. Break, break, break. Best speed to the mothership. Watch your injured. Shadow over slow. Hal-X, take the rear."
"Count on it," said Max. "Col-X, you with me?"
"Always, buddy."
Inferno X's escape procedure was second nature, though Max had never thought he would hear the order. The squadron broke off across the conflict and dived for the desert floor to reassemble in broken chevrons at 7, 8, and 900. It was an hour's flight to the Hog, an hour to safety within the Behemoth's devastating firing arcs. Max and Kalani flew across the back of the squad, watching the enemy for evidence they were done. The Maths gathered at higher altitude and used the sun to obscure their positions and direction.
"What have you got, Col-X?"
"Not a lot that glare, Max. They're tracking us, I think."
"Copy, Col-X. Stand by," said Max. "Montex, do you copy? Where are you?"
"On our way home," said Monteith after a pause.
He sounded tired.
"We had to pull some stunts on the way down, though."
"What do you mean, we?"
"I couldn't leave him there for ground evac," said Monteith. "He's hurt, Max. It's pretty bad. I've got him in the claws. Gentle, though."
"You're cool, Monts. Don't fall.
Hear you, Max. Mont-X out."
"There's nothing more you can do for him, Hal-X," said Valera,
her open comm relaying everything to her. Mostly, it would be silence. "Keep your eyes up. Keep them off us. We've got some sick birds up here. This isn't going to be quick."
"Copy, Valex."
Max turned a circle, squinting into the sun through Martha's eyes. All 10 of them were still up there, still tracking.
"What are they doing?" asked Kalani. "Seeing us off?"
"I wish," said Max. "They're waiting for our formation to show them who the weakest are. We'll have our work cut out getting home."
"Flightcom, are you reading all this?" asked Valera.
"Copy, Val-X. We'll advise as we see it. Good luck."
Muller sounded tired. Max left Martha tracking the math drakes and looked down at Inferno X, making best speed back to the heart of granite. He could see two with minor wing tears, one with a trailing hind leg, and another with the tail burned black but mercifully still intact. Nothing the tweakers couldn't fix when they got home. He could only guess at the condition of his squadmates. Everything he could see, they could see too.
"Valex, Halex, do you copy?"
"Go ahead."
"We have to use the injured as bait, Skipper."
"Don't joke with me, Halex."
"He's right," said Kalani. "They're so obvious from up here. If the maths attack, they'll target the weak. They want dead drakes on the ground, not a squad we can patch up and send back out."
"Suggestions?"
"We can't defend them at close quarters. At least if we stand off, we can call in threats as they go. Put a spotter on each injured flyer, a wing defense on each spotter, and everyone else flies diversion and break up. What do you say, Skipper?"
"I say it's our best option. Brief it out."
"Okay, patch me across the squad. Who's the one with the grade 3 tear in the left wing? A real sloth?"
"That's Roberts," said Valera. "You're patched. Do it. I doubt the maths are going to wait much longer."
"Inferno X, Halex, orders, orders. All injured drakes to fly line astern of Rob X. Roberts, you have to keep pushing."
"There's a lot of whistle through the wing, Halex, and I'm a little bruised, but okay to lead," said Roberts.
"Copy, Rob X. Right. Here's what we're going to do."
Chapter 12. I saw a behemoth in the growing tank once. Well, it was more of a growing warehouse, a really big one. It was fully submerged and fed by a single tube into its stomach. It was weird, because it was only about 20 meters long, and the tank was over a kilometer long, so it would fit when it was fully grown. That was going to take a year, apparently. How boring is that? Maximus Halloran, aged 15. The bridge of the Heart of Granite, Avery preferred Command and Control Center, was as tense as she'd known it in months. The term bridge just didn't do it justice at all. It was 200 meters long, 180 meters wide at its base, and narrowing to 60 meters wide at the head, just behind the snout. It was full of sound and color, busy with chatter and the energy of its staff, and right now, alongside the tension, was the ill odour a behemoth exuded when it needed a regeneration cycle. Avery had walked from the neck walkway through the main bulkhead, and it seemed everyone from every department wanted her. Doors had opened from weapons control, radar, life systems, and even the ERC systems integration unit, and people filled the space around her. She'd brushed them all aside and walked around the top of the brain, which was some 60 meters in diameter, and gave her usual shudder at the memories it evoked. To aspire to the position of behemoth commander, one of the prerequisite jobs was that of a movement and functions manipulator. That meant shift after endless shift wired into the sluggish reptile synapses, with your hands in thin superconducting gloves, as you and your 5 co-manipulators relayed orders through the kneading and probing of the revolting sludgy tissue in the pockets architectured into the brain. It felt almost nothing like dough, yet breadheads was the popular slang. Had been for years. Avery had been told she'd grow to love the touch of the great beast. She had always utterly hated it. The world beyond the brain was her domain now. The tactical tables, the ornate meeting table, the operations portals, and the wall-to-wall video relays, giving a 360-degree view of the outside. And if that wasn't enough, they had a direct feed from the heart of Granite's eyes, which gave them light in a slightly different spectrum. It was particularly useful for spotting incoming spy flies and a critical aid at night. One of the things she loved best was bringing important dignitaries up here, the ones who assumed commanding a behemoth was a simple task, and watched them gape and shrivel as the confusion of information, of sound and vision, battered them. The mighty were rendered insignificant, and all their condescension washed away, to be replaced by proper respect. The politicians always thought they were in command. They didn't have a fucking clue. It was a shame that Solomon did. Of course she did. She'd been commander of the Hog's sister behemoth, the Steelback, before her astonishing, incomprehensible appointment to the top of the pyramid.
Commander?
Avery turned from the vast main screen and rubbed a hand down her face.
Flight Commander Muller. Good. Come with me.
She led Muller to an unoccupied tactical table for a little relative privacy. The two of them stood side by side, Avery punching up data, radar, and predicted flight paths.
"What the fuck is going on?" she asked. "God's teeth, Gerhard. Can you feel it in here? Our elite squad is being ripped up."
"It's a mess," said Muller. "And Valera has rejected help from other squads."
"Overrule her."
Muller sucked his top lip.
"Come on, Nicola, not Valera. She says it isn't about numbers, that more drakes won't help, and that we may lose more getting Inferno X home. I trust her judgment."
Avery stared at Muller, searching for doubt.
"All right, what am I looking at here? This is one screwed-up formation."
Avery tapped the tactical radar on which the Inferno drakes were represented by bright green blips, and the enemy in red. Well, you had to be traditional sometimes.
"They're running a distraction and obstruction defense. Those four in a line are the wounded. It seems to be working, so far."
Avery shook her head.
"What do you really think?"
"I think I trust Inferno X."
"Right. And what have we got on these math drakes?"
"We'll have to wait until they're back and we can upload all the tactical data from the drakes. But we know they are slightly bigger, stronger and faster."
"Is it an unlocking or a fleshware upgrade?"
Muller blew out his cheeks.
"Mostly fleshware, I'd say. But it's hard to be certain."
"All right. What do you need from me?"
"A firing solution. 40 mil based. Something IX can get below. Flight path and entry grid too."
"No problem. Where's my chief gunner?" She was dogging my footsteps like, well, a dog just now. "Lieutenant Edney, where are you when I need you?" "Right here, ma'am," said Edney.
Avery spun round. Lisa Edney was just a few feet away, hands behind her back. She was mid-height, with bobbed black hair, and wore glasses in defiance of everything technology had to offer. She said her face was too soft, and it needed hardening up. Avery understood her point.
"Right. Good. Thought I'd need you, I suppose." "It seemed probable," she said. "We have work to do."
Avery indicated the tactical radar tracking the approach of Inferno X.
"Inferno X is being pursued. They have injured. I need a firing solution for a southeasterly approach, rolling round to a northwesterly entry. No missiles. Stick to 40 mil and flank guns. I need it in about 10 minutes. "I'll have it in 5, Commander." "Smart arse. In that case, I want it in 3.
Edney turned and strode away towards the weapons control room at the back of the command centre.
"Right, Gerhard. Anything else?"
"The XO and I have medical and ERC emergency teams already on station, but we'll need to think how to handle the PR.
Avery shrugged.
"PR can wait. Get as many of them home as you can first. I'll find you in flight command if I need you."
Avery watched Muller go before turning back to the tactical screen.
"What the hell are we walking into?" 2 on approach from the west, approximately 280 degrees,
said Calder.
"Copy, Calex," said Max. "Intercept with Red X."
Max watched them move in. Down to his right, Valera and Stepanek were chasing off another. Three more were circling very high above them, which left four.
Compass point attacks incoming!
Nevex's voice cut across the comm.
Steep angle approach!
Salex here, I have north, said Selevsky.
Gurex here, I have south, said Gurney.
Colex with me, we'll sweep east to west, said Max. Robex, you have six incoming, four on compass point approaches.
Top three diving, said Palex.
This is the big one, said Max. Top cover, move to intercept.
Max dived, seeing the Mathdrakes approach in the clear air. Below, their quartet of wounded made steady progress across the desert floor, and at least had sight of the Heart of Granite. The Granite would have them on screen by now, via the high-res long-lens cameras mounted on her snout. This was probably the enemy's last chance to make a statement, and in front of the flagship behemoth of the UE fleet would be the best place to make it.
Colex, where are you?
Tracking the easterly approach. Sweep west. I'm going low to high to play a game of chicken.
Copy that, said Max.
Max trimmed Martha's wings to still some vibration and heard the whistle and whine across her scales as she gathered yet more speed. He was approaching from the southeast, and the thrill took him.
I'll be coming across your left flank, Schmitty, he said. Be ready.
Copy, Alex, said Schmidt.
His Drake, with a burned tail, was in the centre of the quartet and struggling to maintain his line.
Don't blow me off course. I think I can fly high enough to avoid that. Stand by!
Max was certain his target had seen him coming. In fact, he was counting on it. Martha's body rippled with a passing anxiety, something she sensed and couldn't communicate.
What is it, princess? Asked Max.
He was at close to top speed, and his mind was focused. He'd be on the Mathdrake in half a minute. He had his trajectory right, and assuming the Mathdrake intended to take out Schmidt, he was going to get in the way at the perfect moment.
Show me, Martha. What's the problem?
He sent the impulse with his mind, too. Martha looked pointedly at the Drake coming in from the south, then the one from the north. Max projected their impact points using pure instinct to make the complex calculation.
Gurex, Salex, this is Halex. Which of you is on target first?
Gurex, said Gurney.
Agreed,
said Selevsky.
Pull away 100 meters from your target point. Turn hard, don't look back. They're setting you a trap.
Copy, Halex. Thank you.
I live to save others, said Max.
Max scorched in, bringing his arms to level. Martha flashed across the desert floor, no more than 50 above the undulating sand, and less than 10 above the stricken Drakes when she reached them. It was all laid out before him. He was behind the enemy Drake heading in from the west. It was Killarney's target. He could see Killarney hammering in from the bright eastern sky, descending hard, ready to test the enemy's courage. They'd flinch, or they'd both die. After all, she was falling. She didn't care anymore. The first Mathdrake flew in from the south. Gurney was closing at extreme speed, and Max prayed he'd time it right. In the split second before the potential impact point, both Drakes pulled away. The enemy went left and whipped past Max. Gurney went with it. Max's target had been tasked to take Gurney out, but now, without a target, it came straight on.
Hello, hello, said Max.
He washed over Schmidt, rolled 90 degrees, and suggested lances of fire. Martha obliged, and her flame raked along the enemy's left flank and wing. It was there and gone in a blink, but was a strike nonetheless. A beat later, Killarney flew straight into her target, her Drake's claws dragging across its back as it tried to dive aside. He saw a wing tear appear before they separated. The final attacker flew in on a collision course with Roberts. Selevsky roared by overhead, her Drake's mouth already open, ready to bite and breathe. The Mathdrake jerked up, whipped over her head and down again. Max blinked, not sure he believed what he was seeing.
Schmitty, roll left! I... Holy shit, said Schmidt, as he saw the Mathdrake rushing for him.
Max kept Martha's eyes on him and executed a sharp left turn. The Mathdrake drove in. Schmidt, his Drake wobbling, attempted to turn aside, but he was too slow. The Math ran fire across his wings and stamped down with its claws, fatally unbalancing him. The burned tail sought vainly for purchase and balance. Schmidt's left wingtip dipped violently, making a 90-degree turn and slowing far too fast. With no time to react, Jack X and her Drake ploughed straight into Schmidt, and the pair of Drakes tumbled hard into sand.
"Fuck!" shouted Max. "Jack X and Schmidt X down! I repeat, both down! Inferno X is 8 down!"
"Inferno X, flight comm. Firing solution acquired. Immediate drop to 50 on my mark. 40 mil fire imminent. Skirt the hog along her eastern flank. Emergency entry authorized. We're ready for you. Come on in."
"Copy, flight comm," said Valera.
"Inferno X, flight comm, on our mark. 3, 2, 1, mark."
The remainder of the squadron dropped steeply towards 50 meters. The hog was close now. Max could see her eyes, and the slight rolling movement of her legs at rest was a thing of pure beauty right now. Across her spine, scale plates rolled back, and the 40 millimeter cannon spiraled up, swiveled to the south and filled the sky above Inferno X with a deluge of armor-piercing slugs. Max shuddered to think of those things ripping into Martha's body. He flew down alongside Roberts.
"You made it, Rob X," he said. "Only just, buddy."
Robert's voice came in gasps.
"Gonna need some help getting out of my pouch, I think." "Do you need brakes on landing?" asked Max. "Could do." "Tuck in behind me," said Max. "I'll see you in."
Max put Martha ahead of Robert's Drake and turned past the hog's snout, dropping immediately down into the lee of her eastern flank. Machine guns bristled from their turrets all the way along, while down on the sand, Marines were ready to provide further cover fire.
"Some days, you even have to respect the grunts," said Max.
He moved Martha out from the hog shadow, turned a gentle left, and lined up on the flight deck. The landing lights were flashing, and further in, he could see red pools of light indicating medic teams. It was going to be busy in there.
"On my tail, Rob X."
"Copy, Hal X."
Robert sounded vague.
"Yeah, I'm with you."
"Stay that way," said Max.
He brought Martha over the ramp, seeing the lights flaring and the white lines of the runway hurrying beneath him. He flared Martha's wings and came to a quick stop about 3/4 of the way into the hangar.
"Brace yourself, Martha. Take a look, would you?"
Martha turned her head. Inferno X Drakes were crowding outside where the sound of gunfire had ceased. But 70 meters away, and slithering desperately along the bone floor, came Roberts, plainly unconscious inside his pouch.
"This is going to hurt," said Max.
Max hunched his shoulders and relaxed his back. Martha hunkered down in response, drawing her wings forwards and out of harm's way. Roberts Drake careered into her, shunting them along the runway and rattling Max about painfully despite the best efforts of muscle and fluid. Martha jammed her claws against the bone floor, the resultant shrieking sound forcing ground crew to turn away, hands over their ears. Max gasped at the impact, keeping his feet pointed down, and Martha groaned at the effort, backing her wings on Max's signal and bringing them to a complete stop. The shrieking ceased, and Max slumped forwards momentarily, taking in a huge gulp of air and sending Martha a wave of love before triggering the release on his pouch.
"Grim will have you now. Be good, and get some rest."
Martha rumbled something in her throat in response. Max scrambled out of the pouch, the lubricant cascading off his suit. He slid quickly down her chest and onto the floor, and raced back to help Roberts. The air was full of the sound of orders, the whirring of machinery, and the cries of Drakes. Dull thumps beneath his feet signalled other Drakes landing. Medcarts and stretchers hummed in towards every Drake. Tweakers with the big ERC logo on the backs of their overalls hurried in to assess reptilian damage. Max moved quickly under the neck of Robert's Drake and patted her at the top of her chest to make her stand up. He scooted back a couple of paces as she complied.
"Where's Risa? Is she safe?"
Max flashed Grim a smile while climbing the Drake's chest.
"She's peak. Flew the best I've ever seen her today. Bringing up the rear with the skipper. Get Martha into her pen and go find her. But first, get one of those medcarts over here. Roberts is hurt."
Max climbed up to Roberts' pod. His eyes were closed, and he was slumped forwards. Roberts? Johannes, it's Max. Come on, buddy. Time to get out. Max found the manual release, and the top of the pouch rolled back and away. He fumbled briefly inside the pouch until he found the manual trigger stud. The pouch eased forwards, lubricant cascading out, and Max scrambled around to the side.
Holy mother, how hard did they hit you?
Robert's left arm was broken at the shoulder. His collarbone had snapped and protruded from his skin. Blood had soaked down his suit. The shoulder was clearly dislocated, and yet he had still flown all the way home.
Shit, but you're a hard bastard, said Max. Come on, we need you out.
The stricken pilot moved his head and moaned as his collarbone shifted. He mumbled something, but Max couldn't pick it up.
Easy now, buddy. Help's here.
Alex? Max?
Max looked down.
Hey, Gordy. Got a sick one for you here.
The great bald and barrel-chested medic with Gordievsky on his overalls nodded solemnly.
He's not the only one. Get down. We'll take it from here.
Max dropped to the ground and almost fell onto his hands and knees. Gordievsky put a hand under his shoulder and helped him back up.
You need a massage, some anti-inflammatories, and a whole lot of rest, he said, in his gloriously thick Eastern European accent. But you'll ignore me, I know.
Until the moment I've counted the squad in.
Do what you have to do.
Max gasped in a breath.
Hey, did you see Monts? He would have come in with the Nuge in his claws. They're both all right.
Gordievsky nodded.
Monteith practically laid Nugent on a stretcher before he landed. Top flying. They're both up in medical. Nugent's been smacked about pretty hard, but nothing that won't heal.
Good.
Max managed a frail smile.
That's good.
Max looked down the length of the flight deck. He could see the Inferno X Drakes cluttering the runway. He could see pilots being helped onto stretchers, while others were still in their pouches, being stabilized before they were moved. He walked down the line, seeing the expressions on the faces of ground crew and medics alike. A glance back, and he could see the flight command balcony was packed with a disbelieving audience. Max wanted to walk tall, to show them it wasn't so bad. Only it was, and he couldn't. But he kept on walking, and at last found something to smile about. There were Valera, Kalani, and Stepanek, walking towards him and checking the squad one by one. He jogged down to meet them.
Hey, he said. Glad you could all get out on your own.
Valera turned to him, the shock of all she was seeing on her face.
Just look at this mess, she said.
Chapter 13.
The problem with the glorious design of the Fire Drake is that it was undiluted by any strands of Terran DNA. We couldn't engineer indigenous DNA into it and make it work. So the Dragon of Myth is an alien life form, and people immediately speculated whether aliens ever flew them in our skies in centuries gone by. Our issue was more pressing. What would happen to the humans asked to fly them? Professor Helena Markov, Managing Director, Extra Reptilian Construct Organization. Gargan's was quiet that night. Plenty of people were out and dancing, but there was none of the normal frenetic energy about it. Mostly they stood in groups and talked. And stared. Max nursed a glass of whiskey into which the ice had long since melted. Those few with him had only left the rack out of a sense of duty and in the wake of further bad news. None of the downed Drakes or their pilots had survived. That made it official. Inferno X was 8 down.
We have to have a naming, said Max.
Valera nodded.
I know, but we aren't all here.
Barring those in medical, only Reese is missing, said Max.
Reese, who had shut her door on it all and was alone with Grimm.
Come on, Skipper. Get it done and we can move on. I think the whole bar is waiting.
Valera sighed and pushed herself to her feet. The squad, just 11 of them left, assembled in a circle. The music fell silent, and everyone in Gargan's with it. Valera raised her glass. "And you're all going to drain yours when I'm done, right?" she muttered to them, before raising her voice. "To our lost, we name you. We remember you as heroes of Inferno X. Abraham, Lankovsky, Jax, Lasano, Schmidt, Jess, Barini, Fellows. You made the sacrifice. You are gone, but will ever remain Inferno X. Salute!"
Glasses were raised and drained. The silence in Gargan's was brief, and then applause began to grow. It boomed around the ten-way space, louder than he had ever heard it, and Max closed his eyes and let it roll over him, soaking in the emotion until it faded, and all that was left was an echo in his memory.
"Thank you," said Valera to all who could hear. "Now, let's celebrate their talent and their lives."
Gargan's closed early that night, and Inferno X had returned to their racks long before the last dance. Max woke well before the bells and let Annabeth sleep on, letting the sounds of the hog settle into his body, just like he had the first night he'd been on board. First, there was the hum, a bass tone with a slight rhythmic throb. It was always there in the background, blood pumping through arteries as thick as tree trunks. It was a sound of comfort and security. Next, there was the distant vibrating rumble and thud, one every 15 seconds or so. The heart beating, powering the blood. The sound of life. Third, there was the titanic dull roar that surrounded everything. The wind you would never feel. Breath entering and leaving the cavernous lungs. It was the sound of health, if you felt you needed to hear it. And lastly, there was the repeated heavy crump that reverberated gently through everything. 30 pairs of giant clawed feet, impacting the ground in a rhythm more akin to a centipede's than a giant iguana's.
"You okay?"
Annabeth was staring at him.
"Yeah, not so bad," said Max. "Sorry I wasn't great company last night."
"Or the night before, but I think I can find it in my heart to forgive you."
Annabeth sat up.
"I need to go. Got a brain pattern scan this morning, and the hammer claws are out on Early's."
Max sat up and drew her to him, kissing her and burying his face into her neck, breathing her in.
"It would be so much worse without you."
"Are you going soft on me, Halloran?"
"Maybe."
"Good."
Annabeth got out of bed, pulled her clothes on, and gave him a peck on the cheek before going to the door.
"My place next time. Your pod smells too much of sweaty man."
When the bell sounded a few minutes later, summoning them all from their pods, Max pulled on his sweats and walked out of the squadron, the gentler sounds of the hog having reminded him that life went on. One look at his friends, silent and drawn when he strode in, reminded him that, for some of them, it didn't. Not straight away. What struck Max most as he walked to the coffee machine to pour himself the obligatory half-litre mug was how sparsely populated the squadron was, how few of them remained fit to fly. 8 of them were dead. Another 4 were hospitalised with broken bones, severe concussion or internal injuries from the sheer force of impact. Everyone was sitting in their usual places, which only emphasised the great gaps that had been torn in the squad. Max sat between Redfern and Kalani, who bumped their shoulders with his in a half-hearted version of their normal boisterous greeting.
"All right, Reds?"
"So-so," said Redfern.
"Risa?"
"The nightmare is running through my head on endless loop. There is so much more I should have done," said Kalani.
"You can't afford to think like that," said Gurney, who was seated opposite them by Jess's empty place. "Check the data. It's incredible so many of us survived."
Max nodded. The room fell silent again. Max tried to catch the eyes of as many as he could, asking them with a raise of his eyebrows if they were all right. The response was patchy at best, though Stepanek at least seemed pumped for some reason. Eventually, all of them switched their attention to Valera, who was studying her peepalm. She was waiting for something,
if her constant refreshing of the screen was anything to go by.
"Skipper?"
asked Pallon.
"What's happening?"
Valera looked up.
"Sorry, pal. Sorry, everyone. It's..."
The door to their rack squeaked open, and in came Grim, pushing a trolley. Scents of hot food and fresh baked bread heralded its cargo, and Max realized that he was hungry, so not absolutely everything had gone to shit.
Grim wheeled the trolley over to the drinks point, looking intensely uncomfortable under the gaze of every pilot, but trying to smile. She shrugged.
"I thought, you know, you might not want to sit and eat and have everyone staring at you, so, you know..."
Valera took her hands.
"Grim, you are an absolute angel. Thank you."
Grim relaxed, and her smile broadened.
"Oh, great. Well, it was nothing, you know. Right, well, I'll be going."
"Like hell you will," said Valera. "Eat with us."
Grim scrubbed her hands down her fatigues, blushing.
"No, it's not my place. This is a Drake squadron."
"Grim, you're practically family," said Monteith. "Sit down. Max will make a space for you."
"Yeah, of course," said Max, springing up. "Sit down. Let me get you something."
Grim made a half move and then stopped. Valera caught her eye.
"I'd have all of you up here if I could. Every medic, every flight crew. Picking us up yesterday when we got home, you have no idea how much it means. So do as you're told and sit down and we'll serve you for a change. All right?"
Kalani held out her hands, and Grim shrugged and went over to a cheer from the squad.
"Eggs, is it, Grim?"
"Yep. Scrambled, on toast and with a few beans. And a coffee, if that's okay."
Max grinned.
"Your wish is my command."
He walked to the trolley, leading a surge of hungry pilots grabbing plates and descending on the food. Max delivered Grim's breakfast and took his own over to sit by Monteith, who put an arm around his shoulders and pulled him in hard, almost dumping his food on the floor.
"I love you too, Monts, even with your scratchy hair. Hey, you should have seen me when I had dreads."
Monteith wrapped a knuckle on his skull for good measure and headed off to the trolley.
"All right, people," said Valera, sitting down and talking while she ate. "It's 07:15 now, and we have our debrief at 0800 in the flight deck briefing room. It's going to be a hard day, let's not pretend otherwise. But we're Inferno X. Yesterday was tough, but today we're the flagship squadron, and I need you all to act like it, though you might not feel like it. Okay?"
Valera looked around the squad and nodded at what she saw.
"Good. So shower, shave if you're hairy, make sure you smell nice and put on clean fatigues if you've got any,"
she said, giving Max a stare and drawing a chuckle from the rest of them.
"Get down to Alpha Deck and spend a moment with your Drake before the debrief. It'll be a fact-finding exercise, so keep your emotions out of it. If you can't, don't say anything at all." "Any news on our medical cases?"
asked Redfern.
"I was coming to that. One by one. Roberts has a broken collarbone, dislocated shoulder, and some whacked-out tendons and ligaments in his arm and across his shoulder and chest. He's out of it for 6 weeks. The Nuge has electrical burns to his face and neck, muscle tears in his biceps and quads from his crash landing, and also sustained a concussion. But he's not as bad as we feared. Monteith saved his life. The MAF circled back to make sure his Drake was dead."
Monteith inclined his head modestly. The squad applauded him, and Max gave him a big kiss on the cheek.
"That is disgusting," said Monteith. "I won't be saving you if that's what I can look forward to. That was for saving the Nuge. Just imagine how grateful I'd be if you saved me."
Max winked and pouted.
"Should that horror arise, I will don my armoured underpants immediately."
"All right, you two, enough of the love," said Valera. "Kane is in a bad way, but it's not life-threatening. He has a severe concussion, whiplash injuries, and a broken leg. We won't be seeing him for some time, I'm afraid. And finally, Colette. Well, she's pretty much one giant bruise. She suffered some internals and had abdominal bleeding. She's stable, but like all of them,
Some rehab time will be necessary before she's fit to fly. Go see them all regularly. Out of sight is not out of mind. Not in my squad.
Valera blew out her cheeks.
Lastly, I can confirm that all the bodies have been recovered along with our drakes. So we have our people back for remembrance. Nothing has fallen into enemy hands. The memorial will be in the reflection room at 1400 tomorrow, with cremations immediately afterwards.
Got a suggestion, said Gurney.
Fire away.
Since we're debriefing on the flight deck, how about doing a run?
He shrugged.
I mean, we could all do with the cardio and a little energy burn, and it'll send the right message. What do you think?
I think last one to their Drake pen does the squad laundry for a week. Be back here at 2:15 for the starting gun, said Valera.
For those few minutes, they forgot everything but the race. Every dirty trick in the book was played. The pushing, jabbing and tripping were all way over the top, as if the attempt to exercise yesterday demanded they risk further serious injury. Going across the flesh bridge towards the inner scale, Max was just behind Calder at the head of the pack, and that was only because she'd shouldered him into the wall just before the left turn onto the bridge. Valera had chosen a quiet route, conscious of appearing disrespectful to their dead, knowing there would be some who would misinterpret their high-intensity determination for plain high spirits. But there were always some people about, and when Calder was slowed by a group of flight crew heading towards their mess hall, Max took his chance. He got right in her boot prints, stooped and tapped her ankle with an outstretched hand. She careered to the right, colliding with a railing. Max left her to dust herself down and continued the chase. He was in the clear and heading for the stairs. The next moment, he felt a blow to the back of his leg, and he was tumbling into the dust, dirt and marbles of desiccated behemoth flesh. "Fuck it!" he growled, hearing a triumphant shout as Gurney vaulted his prone body and haired off. The bastard was fast. Max would give him that. Max drove to his feet and accelerated along the bridge. Redfern, Nevon, Xavier and Valera were all past him by now. He hit the stairs, used the rails for balance, and vaulted down flight by flight as they wound down towards the flight decks. He burst into the echoing space, feeling the exhilaration of the run, pissed that he wasn't first, but buzzed he wasn't last either. Valera was at the door, counting them all in, logging who was last. Max's money was on Selevsky. She was a great flyer, but a total slug on the sprint. But the moment his feet rang on the bone deck, he slowed and stopped. The deck was clear, but the place stank of blood, ERC shit, and cleansing agents. Everything came flooding back, and the muscles in his arms began to ache at the memory of Roberts's Drake crashing into his on landing, and the mess he'd been inside his pouch. Max sucked his lip, put it behind him, and jogged towards Martha's pen, already feeling the warmth of her in his mind. Grim was at the door to the pen, her fresh overalls already sporting smears of dirt and Drake oil.
"She okay?" asked Max.
"Subdued," said Grim,
and she shuddered.
"Can't you feel it? Not just her, but every Drake. Every ERC, for that matter, whether ground or air lizard. They know. I think they grieve."
Max saw the conviction in her face. He paused to take in the atmosphere and the noise, and had to agree. There was a dampening of energy in here, a pall of shock, or that's how it felt. And it didn't just come from the crew.
"Weird."
"Not really," said Grim. "You think about them like I do."
"You've got me there."
Max unlatched the pen and walked in, blowing out his cheeks at the wash of heat. Martha was lying down, her tail along the length of her body, and her neck curled back along her spine. She was plugged into the central ERC system that fed her the exact quantity of nutrients she needed, and constantly monitored her condition. She raised her head in greeting, and brought it towards him.
"You look tired, Princess."
Martha stared at him, and opened her jaws wide, as if yawning to confirm his words. It was hard to define the feelings he got from her. There was warmth, but there was something else too, and perhaps it was loss.
Reckon we might not be flying for a while. Not until we can make ourselves whole again, you know? Become the Inferno X we should be. Hard to do with only half your people. I can't stay, but I'll be back soon. Rest up, okay?
He turned to go, only to find her head coming to rest on his shoulder, weighing him down. It was a brief moment, and he turned his head just in time to catch her eye and see the depths of her emotions before she pulled back.
"Did you see that?"
he asked. Grim nodded.
"Bloody hell."
"Sometimes I envy you,"
she said.
"You can feel her, and I can only look."
"Aye, but one day I'll fall into those feelings and never come back. You can look forever."
Valera walked by, leading the squad.
"Come on, Max. We're all going in together."
"See you later," he said.
"Good luck,"
said Grim. The flight deck briefing room was large enough to accommodate all six Drake squadrons, but today only a handful of chairs and tables were set out facing the war screen. There was water and biscuits on every table, and Max dumped himself down between Valera and Navon, who had the tidiest beard on the hog, at the front. He poured them all water and helped himself to a biscuit. It was a little stale.
"I wonder who's coming to tell us everything's all right," said Navon.
Not for the first time, Max wished he had a French accent too.
"The XO is my guess," said Max.
And he was proved right moments later, when Kirby walked in, flanked by two of his senior staff. Muller entered alone, looking like he'd been handed his cards. And lastly came Dr. Eleanor Rosenbach, a very senior tweaker for a mission debrief, even one as difficult as this. Max felt a sweep of unease. The atmosphere in the room switched from apprehension to tension in a blink. Everyone straightened in their chairs to watch the execs as they gathered under the screen. One of Kirby's people, a thin-faced ping-pusher called Hewitt, who seemed glued to his exo's side most of the time, tapped up a few inset screens of data and video using his P-palm. Up popped a stream of stuff Max couldn't care less about, some transcripts of comm chatter, and an HD vid of Inferno X's final approach. Kirby faced them and waved a hand at the screen. He was a tall man with a powerful frame and had served in the army on combat duty before moving to his executive position. The endless hard decisions his job demanded were reflected in the lines on his face and in the grey marking his neat beard and moustache.
"Don't worry about all that. It's just background to the real issues in play here," he said. "The first of which is, how are you feeling? How's your morale? Where are your heads right now, and how are your bodies faring? Squadron Leader Orin, I'm sure you speak for the squad."
"Thank you, sir. And on behalf of the squad, thank you for your concern. I won't gloss over this. While those of us here are fine physically, we're in an average state at best. We aren't used to losing our people, let alone eight in the same mission. So we've had a sleepless night, a whole lot of guilt-ridden nightmares, and now we're about to relive the whole thing. Not a whole lot of positives to be had, sir."
"Understood, Valera. Thank you for your honesty. I can ease your minds on one score. We're not going to hold a blow-by-blow analysis of the mission. We have Drake Cam footage, voice records, and all your flight data. All we're lacking is your take on the enemy Drakes. We saw almost nothing of them on the mission downloads. I'll open the floor for this one. Yes, Gurney."
"It's easy to sum up. They were bigger, stronger, and faster than us. Their weapon suite was more powerful, flame hotter, and ECMs that could discharge massive amounts of electricity. They could also fire their ECMs like Seeker missiles. The fact we're better pilots means we got home at all, but even so, 10 of them took out 8 of us and whacked 4 others into hospital, sir."
"A great start, thank you. So was this upgraded fleshware, or are we facing a sentience unlock?"
"I'd say there's been a sentience tweak," said Silevsky. "Some of their turns defy belief unless the Drakes have more autonomy."
"Yeah, I disagree," said Xavier. "If a fleshware upgrade sped up transmission of human impulse to Drake, I think you can explain their reaction speeds."
"But we can only think so fast," replied Silevsky.
If you factor in their raw speed, which diminishes reaction time still further, I can't see any other way to do it. They must have allowed the Drake some freedom in evasion moves at the very least.
There must have been musculature enhancements, though, said Gurney. How else do you explain some of their wing positioning and switching moves?
Does it really matter?
Asked Max, bitterness surfacing momentarily.
They were better than us. End of story.
Yes, it does matter,
said Rosenbach. She had an earnest expression on her soft round face, endless eyes and delicate long fingers that danced over her peepalm.
If we're to match them quickly, we need to know if we're looking at physical systems, impulse transmission, Drake thought processes, or human improvement. Otherwise, how do we direct our work?
Then I'll throw this in, said Valera. Their coordination impressed me. At times, it was as if they were responding to a single set of commands, rather than individual impulse and physical movement instructions. Do they also have a more advanced comm, something that can disperse umbrella commands to a whole squad of Drakes?
Rosenbach stared at her for a moment before nodding and making more notes.
Very interesting, thank you.
Kirby held up his hands.
This is an excellent start, but you can already see we're not going to find all the answers from this one encounter. We need more data, and we must press on with our pursuit of the Maputo, now you've confirmed she's struggling. I feel sure the launch of the new Drakes and her current situation are not coincidental.
Every pilot in the room wanted to ask the same question, but none of them wanted to hear the answer. Kirby gave it to them anyway. Just before he opened his mouth, Max saw Muller take half a pace away. And with every word towards his inevitable senseless conclusion, Max's gorge rose a little further.
We have to test them, explore and expose their weaknesses. We can't implement upgrades to fleshware at the drop of a hat. We have to combat them with what we have. It doesn't matter if they're more advanced. There are still humans in control, and humans make mistakes, which we can observe and use against them. So, you want revenge for the bloody nose they gave you? You can have it. Get out there with Lava Flow A and show them what Inferno X can do. You fly tomorrow at 1100 hours. Any questions?
The silence was ephemeral.
Bloody nose! Shouted Stepanek. Perhaps you weren't watching when the Mavs handed us our fried balls on a bed of toasted scales? We're still mopping the blood from the flight deck, and you want us to go out again?
Said Xavier.
Did you visit medical?
Asked Zalewski.
Perhaps you can teach Roberts to fly with one fucking arm.
Why? Demanded Max. Didn't enough of us die yesterday to satisfy Solomon?
Silence!
Roared Kirby, all softness gone, and replaced by something altogether more familiar.
Squadron Leader Orin, you will control your squad!
Valera stood up and held her hands up for quiet.
Make your points without shouting, eh?
She was turned far enough from Kirby that he couldn't see her wink, and when she turned back to face him, she held his gaze for longer than she should before sitting down. Max glanced at Muller, who was impassive.
Such outbursts will not be tolerated, said Kirby,
as Max raised his hand.
Go ahead, Halloran. Carefully.
I apologize for raising my voice, sir,
said Max. Kirby inclined his head.
With the greatest respect, sir, why? Didn't enough of us die yesterday to satisfy you and the Marshal General?
Next to him, Valera's breath hissed through her teeth. Any remaining colour drained from Kirby's face. He walked forwards to stand right in front of Max, glaring down at him.
You will do as you are ordered, and you will not question my integrity or that of the Marshal General. Am I clear?
I was just...
Am I clear, Halloran?
Max gritted his teeth and forced himself to stay in his seat.
Absolutely, sir. I meant no offence, but we lost 8, we've got 4 in medical, and we barely laid a claw on them. Even though we outnumbered them more than 2-1.
Halloran,
warned Kirby.
So what is the point of going out there and having it done to us again?
Are you questioning my orders, boy?
Max bit back on his first thought.
Yes, sir. And I am looking for clarification as to how this decision was reached.
The Exo leaned in and laid a finger on Max's chest.
You are treading a very fine line, Halloran. Be careful you don't slip off.
It'd be a problem, though, wouldn't it, sir? Said Stepanek. If we lose one more pilot, we will be below the minimum required to form a combat squadron.
Kirby straightened to direct his ire at Stepanek, while behind him, Hewitt took a pace forward, his presence drawing the eye. Hewitt paused a moment before speaking.
Calculated insubordination because you're too cowardly to face the enemy. Is that it?
Fuck did you just say?
Max pushed away from the table and stood, his self-control fracturing.
Perhaps I didn't hear you right.
Hewitt shrugged.
You don't have the courage to face them again. I get it. But don't hide behind regulations.
The whole squad was on its feet now, and Max led the shouts.
Calm down,
ordered Valera, but her tone held no conviction. She wanted this confrontation as much as they did, and she wasn't sitting down either. No one was.
You'd better listen, said Kirby. Final warning.
Hewitt has called our courage into question. He has disrespected our dead. He apologizes now.
Sit down.
Kirby's voice was stone, and the pace he took towards Max carried undisguised threat. Buoyed by the support of his commanding officer, Hewitt oozed a smile.
Halloran isn't terribly good with orders, sir.
Max shot him a glance.
No, dickhead. What I'm not good at is offering my squad up for slaughter. The odds were against us yesterday. Today, they're impossible.
Hewitt shrugged.
Typical. You're happy to enjoy the fame, unhappy to face the enemy. It's pure cowardice.
The final piece of Max's self-control broke.
He pushed past Kirby, all but picked Hewitt off his feet, and slammed him against the big screen.
Halloran! Shouted Kirby.
I am this close!
Hissed Max, hearing the rising volume behind him, the shrieking of chairs and the pushing away of tables.
He pinched the thumb and forefinger of his right hand together. No one, certainly not a whining office fuck like you, calls Inferno X cowards.
Let him go right now,
said Kirby, laying a heavy hand on Max's shoulder.
I don't have to call you a coward, sneered Hewitt. You do it to yourself.
Max punched him in the mouth. His fist split Hewitt's lips, and he felt teeth give under the force of the blow. Hewitt's head whacked against the screen, and his hands flew up as the blood started to flow. It was pandemonium. Kirby heaved Max aside violently enough that he almost collided with Muller and Rosenbach, who had been backing towards the door as soon as it looked like trouble. Muller, a veteran of briefing room slanging matches, had a defensive arm across the tweaker, who was gazing at the unfolding chaos in disbelief. Hewitt was staring at the blood and teeth in his hands. Muller was roaring at Valera to get control. Max had lost his footing, and as he scrambled to his feet, Anderson, Hewitt's aide, rushed him, his fists bunched. Max was in no stance to defend himself, and raised his arms to try and deflect the coming blows, as Stepanek stepped in front of him and decked Anderson with a straight punch to the chin that knocked him square on his arse.
Enough!
Roared Valera, just too late to stop Stepanek's glorious punch.
Inferno X, stand down!
Max stood and straightened his fatigues. He looked at his fist, happy with the red marks on his knuckles, then at Hewitt, whose face was white, and whose uniform was streaked with blood from his mouth. Max was breathing hard, but his anger had barely diminished, and when he faced Kirby, he was ready for more. Standing behind the XO, Valera saw Max's expression, and gave him a palms-down gesture.
Halloran, Stepanek, you will place yourselves in my custody immediately. Orin, get your squadron out of my sight. Your orders stand. Consider yourself reprimanded ahead of a formal hearing.
Max sighed.
This sucks. I acted without orders, sir.
Kirby jabbed a finger at him.
I advise you to say nothing
unless you are addressed directly.
Enough, Max, said Valera. Then she mouthed, Thank you.
Max winked and turned his mouth up in a smile.